and welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell the other side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on stellar organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host, with Delilah Jones, president of Imagine Publicity.com, with you each and every Saturday, providing education, enlightenment, and entertainment for our audience, our national audience. And this evening is no different. Welcome, everyone. Whether this is your first show or you are a veteran, it is a pleasure to have you this evening. And I'd like to let you know that we have a guest that I've had on one other time, Dr. Delilah Corey from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, is here, and she is going to address the very important issue and relationship this evening between addiction and crime. But before I bring her in, I just want to say good evening, Delilah Jones, and how are you? How's everything in South Carolina?
Hi, Donna. Everything's going great in sunny old South Carolina.
Well, good for you. We've got a bunch of snow that won't melt here. Yeah. So I think that this is a topic that I think is going to touch the hearts of many people, because myself included, I have been touched with a situation of addiction many years ago, and I was a crime victim as a result of trying to help someone who was addicted. And I expect to learn a lot more after having this hour conversation. And Dr. Delilah Corey is actually, you know, this is one of her areas of expertise. Rather than go through her entire biography, many listeners are familiar, but in case they are not, Dr. Corey is an integrative medicine specialist as well as an emergency room doctor. Her background also includes oncology, pediatric oncology, anti-aging, and more recently, she is concentrating these days her expertise and her knowledge within the fields of addiction and weight loss as well, among other things. But more recently, I think people nationally and perhaps internationally are recognizing her treatment plan, which is very unique and very effective. So I have to say, and I'm very proud to be a patient of hers as well. She has helped me tremendously. So Dr. Corey, thank you so much for joining us on Shattered Lives. It's a pleasure to have you again. Hello? Hello?
Dr. Corey, are you there? Can you hear me?
Oh, dear.
Hold on.
Okay.
Are you there now?
Hello?
Oh, there you are.
Can you hear
okay.
me? I've been on and I said it's can you hear me still?
Yes, you're on
now. We can
now.
Hear you now. Yes, we. I lost you for a few seconds there, but okay. I'm not sure when we lost you, but I gave a brief introduction of your credentials and said thank you so much for appearing with us. It's a pleasure to have you.
Well, the pleasure is really mine. You know, thank you so much, Donna, for this wonderful introduction. Not only that, but thank you for inviting me to be one of your guests. It's really not just a pleasure to be your guest, but it's also an honor, especially when we discuss a subject matter that is very dear to my heart. You know, addiction really impacts a lot of people and impacts every single person at home. And most of us really don't realize that a lot of the problems we are dealing with has been related in one way or another to some kind of addiction or a system where what I would call neuroendocrine imbalances or imbalances that are happening because of many reasons. So I became interested in addressing addiction in particular. It's not really new to me, and it's not a subject that is I became fond of. I've always been fond of helping people at the core to restore themselves and to make them become whole. And addiction has always been a love to me because of my experience in emergency medicine. Mm-hmm. And because of my life experience as well. I've seen a lot of crimes, a lot of car accidents, a lot of shooting in the emergency room, and a lot of different crime-related issues, and suicides, and a lot of it had to do with one kind of addiction or another. So mm-hmm. I became very interested in seeing if there is a better way to address that issue than to replace one drug with another drug, especially when that particular treatment program or system, which is really replacing one drug with another, has failed us more than once. I mean, we can't forget the failures that we see. And see, if you look at celebrities dying, that's just the tip of an iceberg. Mm-hmm. It's really... And you can see how many of them have died recently and all over the years, you know, very popular names, but many, many, many more people who are suffering some kind of addiction. And really, addiction ranges from being addicted to a person, you know, loving a person, you know, loving mm-hmm. a physical attraction, you know,
where shocking behavior might come into play. I mean, would you call that a people addiction? When if you see that there's stalking behavior, you're addicted to a person.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just the reason is you are activating the reward system because mm-hmm. in a different manner. The reward system is a system that is supposedly there to help you enjoy, be happy, and survive. So it's a system that maintains your survivorship. It's a system that helps you enjoy life and perpetuate. So when this system is dysregulated, it becomes a true problem, or it just gets off balance. I hope that makes sense to you.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I wanted to start out with perhaps asking you, how does the average, because we're bringing it down to the average person as well, because not only do we talk about street drugs, but people, what's in their home medicine cabinets, and that's an epidemic in terms of prescription drugs. But how does the average person know? Is there that fine line between, well, I just, you know, I do this a little bit too much versus becoming addicted? Is there a predisposition for a person's genetic makeup or their biochemistry that would cause them to be addicted versus, you know, even somebody else in the same family?
Well, it definitely has genetics. I mean, it may have some genetic component, and we can discuss that, but there is a new science or a rediscovered science. It's called the science of epigenetic, which is a bidirectional effect of the environment on the gene and the gene on the environment. So that's really not a genetic change at the gene level, but it's our body expressing the gene, which is really how do we express a gene. So if I inherit a gene, or it's really not a gene that is inherited, it's just we have receptors in the brain that, like a lock and a key situation. So we have receptors for example, dopamine, which is an amino acid or a neurotransmitter that is essential. Amino acid or an essential neurotransmitter that is really mainly the feel-good neurotransmitter, and it's called dopamine. But we do have receptors for these, but we have the capabilities to turn on those receptors or turn them off or change the recycling of these dopamine inside the synapses. So,
mm-hmm.
which means really, if I have, if I see someone I love, now what happens is that that's an input, okay? That input goes to a system called the limbic system,
mm-hmm.
or the reward system of the brain. And that reward system is kind of a sensor. It recognizes that's a threat or that's something okay. If it is a threat, it activates a complete system. But if it thinks that, if it does think it's a good thing, it rewards you and it activates the dopamine system. Once you activate that system inappropriately or overactivate the system or stop the, when your body at the synapses, at this junction between two nerve cells,
right.
When you start at that junction to have a tremendous amount of dopamine released, your body immediately recycles this dopamine back inside the cells so that you have a balance, okay? But
mm-hmm.
when you have a disruption with that system, for example, if we have cocaine, over cocaine use, for example, that stops us from recycling the dopamine. So dopamine
mm-hmm.
stays in the synapses a lot longer than it needs to be. It's like a very bright sun, and what would it do to your retina and your eyes? So dopamine is a great thing. Sun is wonderful. But too much of the sun can cause damage, same as with the dopamine. Too much of it can cause damage. So your body is very bright. So what would your body do is turn off the receptor. So your genes are constantly translating and transcribing so that they come to making the necessary things. So when you have too much of a good thing, you down-regulate the production of the receptors for dopamine. So no matter how much dopamine you get, you're not sensitive to its presence anymore. That's why
mm-hmm.
the first encounter with an addiction, you get a high that you never get anymore, and you keep chasing that high over and over and over just because your body had turned off that system.
The receptors, yeah.
Absolutely.
Does our body naturally have, like, you're talking about dopamine, do we have a lot of natural feel-good chemicals, and it's just
Absolutely.
When we introduce something that's foreign to our body, then it mixes everything up, and then we're on the road to hell or whatever?
Well, it's really not... It does not have to be things that you're introducing.
Okay.
That is correct. If you use drugs that stimulate over dopamine production in the synapses, yes, that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But also if you are turning on dopamine receptors by even stress, because when
mm-hmm.
you're stressed out, your dopamine receptors or your dopamine complex is so in close relation anatomically
mm-hmm.
to the limbic system. So everything is so close, so it really affects your entire body and causes dysregulation. So if I tell you addiction is a disease of out of balance, is everything that you're no balanced anymore. You have
mm-hmm.
too much pain. It's a continuous interaction, and your body mm-hmm. is continuously trying to maintain normality and homeostasis. But
mm-hmm.
the more you use toxins, the more, and toxins could be not only the drug or alcohol or sex or gambling, but the continuous use of other things from the environment, like if you're eating the wrong food, so you're not able to make enough amino acids or neurotransmitters that are necessary for the function of the brain, you become
right.
addicted. If you're not able to restore the energy production because your mitochondria, which produces enough energy, is now unable to do so, So now you have a deficit of energy. So sometimes you may seek what we call self-medication because you're not able to perform. Your energy level is down. So you're going to go for a stimulant. You're going to go to phentermine for weight loss, but it's also a stimulant. It's like from the amphetamine family. So what you do is when, unfortunately, a lot of people, because of the stress in their life, they have imbalances that causes them to self-medicate.
Mm-hmm.
They're stressed, they're anxious, they go for GABA receptors. What? How is that? They just reach out for alcohol and because it puts them down. And then they're tore down for a long time. Now they have to have something to get them up. So they get for the coke or the amphetamine or Ritalin.
Yeah.
And
is each person's tolerance or the ability to achieve the homeostasis, is it different per person or is there a particular time? If you keep doing XYZ to your body, you know, for, you know, 2 months, 3 months, is that when things suddenly go awry and your body can't maintain that? Or, you know, is there a benchmark, a general benchmark, or is it different for every person?
I'm going to explain it to you in a very simple way.
Okay.
Now, you have a brand new, beautiful house, brand new, and then you just get a little infestation of mold or a little infestation of termite. Is that going to make the establishment collapse? No. But if you have no reserve and that house is not maintained and it's old and you're not doing what you're supposed to do to keep that house poor nutrition, poor maintenance, poor, so the smallest amount of termite will just cause the demise of this house.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on how much reserve you have, and the reserve comes from was the foundation of the house good or not. Let me explain that. If I have parents who had given me good genetic foundation because they have not used drugs themselves, or they've not been under a tremendous stress themselves. So my epigenetic that I am receiving is at a highest reserve, peak, optimum. It's different than somebody who comes from a family with either stress level too high or emotional deprivation very high or neglect very high or poor nutrition very high. So we begin, unfortunately, on that play field, we're not equal to begin with, because not every single one of us have a strong foundation from the beginning. That's why addressing addiction has to begin way before you're born, way before a mother is. It's not just okay a month before I'm going to be pregnant, I'm going to stop drinking or stop smoking or stop stressing out or stop having some kind of personal addiction, which whatever that is. It's way or poor nutrition. Oh, I'm going to eat tomorrow. Good. Okay, I'm going to load up with donuts, for example. No, I've got to really give my child a fair chance. So not all children come with a fair chance because they have we call that transgenerational epigenetic changes. These are not gene changes. These are gene translation and gene transcription changes.
Combined with their environment, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Estrogen, poor, bad estrogens, you know, estrogens are making you at higher risk to become addicted because you don't have the proper optimal thing. So, you know, yes, we're not all the same or equal just because we have environmental differences. We have ethnic differences. We have gender differences because, you know, if I'm from a male gender and we were, or a female gender many years ago when they were suppressed, they are at a higher risk then. Now things are changing. Women have changed. So evolution, everything is changing. But the key is how to restore and why to restore and when to restore and who to trust.
Right.
So why do we
restore? Is it a fallacy to say that somebody that maybe comes from a deprived background automatically will have a predisposition to become an addict versus somebody that's come from a pristine upbringing and, you know, that type of thing? Or, you know, are those statements necessarily true or false? Does it have, one have anything
to
do with the other?
The upbringing is very important. But
right.
It's not pristine or affluent upbringing versus poor upbringing. That's not it.
Okay.
Because if you're an affluent environment and you're under a tremendous amount of stress to perform, or you've mm-hmm. been under influence of drugs and alcohol permissible, you're still at a disadvantage. Or if you're
mm-hmm.
a person from a poorer background, but you have come from a family where no matter how much stress you have, you deal with stress with action instead of reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You have a much better chance not to become addicted, even if you come from a poor. It's not the poverty. It's the balance. It's the love. It's the food. It's the environment. It's the stress level. So, but yes, our family influences us. Our food influences us. But it's not because I'm a poor or affluent. It's because
right.
I am poor in love or I'm rich in love. Doesn't matter about the economic background.
Right.
But, of course, the economic background at many situations
mm-hmm.
allow people to have a better food, for example, better nutrition that restore with more amino acids or more protein that are necessary to build up the neuroendocrine system again. So, yes, it has to do sometimes with some affluence, but it's not okay the rich don't get it or the poor do get it. That's not the case.
Right. And isn't that where the stigma might come in, Dr. Akori, with regard to if we adhere to those that fallacy, that these stereotypes, oh, well, you know, they're the people that are going to get addicted because they come from this background or whatever. You know, we were talking the other day with regard to, you know, addiction has to be brought into the forefront. And I think with the type of cutting-edge things that you're doing and with your treatment plan, as, you know, an analogy would be what we're starting to see people, we're starting to address mental health issues because of all of the mass shootings that we've had across the country. And so there is a stigma created just by the word, using the word addiction, right? So is there a better term to use? And if so, how do we get decrease the stigma that goes with addiction?
Well, to be honest with you, the word addiction really means absolutely nothing to me more than if I don't embrace my problem, if I don't really, me as a nation, me as a family, me as a community, start embracing my addict and say, you know what, let's embrace this forum. Let's open this. Let's
mm-hmm.
get out there and do what other groups have done and expose the situation. And instead of blaming people and pointing finger, let's
mm-hmm.
say, you know what, we have an imbalance. How can we correct that imbalance without being judgmental? And how can we restore spirit, mind, and body in a healthier way that makes the system back in balance, where now we'll become optimum citizens, we'll become respected people? It's better to do that than to hide your head and then keep the whole body exposed and then lose very valuable people. Not all addicts are mean people or ugly people. Of course, crime happens from that because they are under influence of of inhibition. All the faculties are inhibited. The prefrontal cortex, the neocortex, the brain function beyond the instinct are dead. So what we need is restore that with love, forgiveness, and restoration. We can restore something if we call it taboo, or we call them drug seekers, or we point finger at them, because they would never come out of the closet. And you know who's an addict? It could be my next door neighbor. It could be my son. It could be my daughter. It could be my, I don't have a daughter, but it could be my cousin. It could be my mother. But she never come out.
You may not know. Yeah, you may not know it.
Well, don't you think goes back to so many other things that we have to deal with as a society, and that is changing the perception of many, many millions of people, which is a very difficult thing to do. But until we do that and change that perception of what this actually is, as the way you explained it, Dr. Okori, then, you know, we continue to run that squirrel cage, and it just keeps going around and around and around, and the cycle is never broken. I see the same thing with violence and the same thing with a lot of other crime issues, where there is such a perception that isn't necessarily always the right perception, especially when it comes to the area of available resources and treatments. You know, these are the areas, I think, where people tend to blame. They want to point the blame. They want to have an excuse. They want to have a reason. And I guess maybe that's part of human nature to want to do that. But until we are able to make those shifts in our way of thinking, we have millions of people that need our help and aren't getting it.
Well,
right.
The more people like us expose the subject and discuss the subject as if it's a subject of national security. It's the security of it's one in three who are addicts. Just because it's prescribed by a doctor, that does not make it less addictive. But not just because I'm having pain and I've been on OxyContin for the last million years, that is no longer an addiction. Let's forget about the stigma and let's address the issues. Let's go beyond that. Let's make sure we save our children and our grandchildren and our great-great-grandchildren and generations before and generations to come. Let's go beyond just the word addiction. Let's go beyond that. Let's be compassionate, empathetic. You know, let's just hold hands and say, you know what, I could be a work addict. You know, in a way, I get pleasure from work just because I have a mission. So in a way, most of us have some sort
obsessive compulsive behavior.
Yeah, that has to do with pleasure, okay? So can we really address the pleasure into the right perspective? But we can't do it unless we restore your neuroendocrine pathways. Your pathways are the highways that are communicating. And you come and destroy the highways and say, you know, let's run. You can't. What I offer is restoring those highways. What I offer is the highway to the networking between all these systems is now blocked. You have the right food. You have the right amino acid that are coming directly into your veins, or right energy. Because without the proper energy, you cannot restore brain function. Brain and heart have the highest density of something called mitochondria, which is the powerhouse. The powerhouse of the cell is called mitochondria. That's where the ATP is made. That's where energy is made. Why is it that ATP is necessary in very high concentration in the brain? Because the brain directs the whole body. So when we use things to compromise the brain energy and the brain electricity and the brain conduction. And so how would you expect that brain to have the best highways? You have to have a highway that is unblocked.
Right.
You have to restore those things, make mm-hmm. things better. But without love, without forgiveness, without compassion, without embracing recovery by opening up the subject
mm-hmm.
and coming, you know, it's not an easy thing to say, okay, I'm an addict. But
no.
You know what? If you don't come out there and say, you know what, I may be under the influence of something, then you may be the next dead person.
Well, that's the first step,
that person.
Right? Yeah. Is there one type of addiction that is more devastating to the body and the mind than any other? Or can you make those kind of comparisons, or are they all devastating in their own way? Or one type of addiction is easier to come off of versus something else?
Okay. All the addictions are very hard on the body and the
mm-hmm.
brain. However,
okay.
anything that drains the brain energy causes more damage quickly. Now, for example, if you are on speed or what we call stimulants, amphetamine, Ritalin, in cocaine, and what you're doing is you're making the energy needed in the brain,
mm-hmm.
very, so you're consuming all your energy into this and you become exhausted very quickly. So you are destroying your energy sources very quickly. I'm going to tell you, the minute we die, when there's no electricity and energy in our body, death, pronouncing a patient dead, means that there is no EEGs, there is no electric impulses in the brain, there is no EKG, which is no electric impulses in the heart. And that
mm-hmm.
means, you know, those are the two parameters we use, and that's where the highest concentration of mitochondria is. So
mm-hmm.
really, when you use something that removes all the energy from your body very quickly, you're probably not going to survive very, very long.
Mm-hmm.
However, with these, they're a little easier to treat if they're addressed properly than the ones with the GABA receptors. GABA receptors are the benzos, and what we call benzos is benzodiazepam-like Valium and Xanax and Ativan and all of these, and alcohol. These are the ones that, these are a little harder to break from sometimes, but with my system they can. Just because if you stop these, you become agitated and you develop seizures, and so they're a little harder to treat unless you're with someone who's really very skilled, like I am.
Yep.
You know, and I hate to say like I am, but I am.
We know you are. That's why we invited you. Hey, let's talk about some of your treatment plan, how it works, and then we can talk about, because of you being an ER physician as well, what have you seen in terms of the impact of addiction with regard to crime on family and, you know, the extended family and whatnot. But, you know, I want our audience to be able to understand what it is that you're offering that is very different than the usual treatment plan. So I think we need to get that in there. We have about 25 minutes, so just letting you know. Okay.
Okay, God bless you. I really appreciate that. Well, it is lovely to really have this amazing conversation, and
well,
it would be even more lovely if we have more people interested to become part of a forum that we're creating where they can talk and discuss and open up to each other and see how we can help them. But the main thing really is what we do is restore spirit, mind, and body. My focus is treat people when their brain is receptive. So I get a lot of my patients into a brainwave that is a very receptive brainwave. So I get them in a meditative state some way or another, whether through electrical means or through meditative means and get them from instead of the beta wave, which is really the most chaotic wave of the brain and the most the fastest brain wave, into a slower brain wave that is a more meditative brain wave, and get them into a parasympathetic mode, which is a more receiving mode. So I don't like to treat my patients when they are into the sympathetic mode because they really can't receive anything no matter how good that stuff is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like in the past when the people in the field used to dump land until it's the right time, you know, they monitor the moon and decide that's the proper time. So for me, I really want to get my patients into that proper moment. Second is really the beautiful thing of this is really we have no cravings because we eliminate this because I restore what's missing. So if you are taking a lot of dopaminergic stuff, like a lot of, so I know your receptors are down, so I have to give you enough amino acids that create your own dopamine again or neurotransmitters again. So we give you IVs that has all these elements that are missing in your brain. But not only just the elements that are missing, but the cofactors that are necessary for you to manufacture the necessary neurotransmitters. So suppose I give you all the amino acids, but I do not give you the proper cofactors, whether it's a B vitamin, a specific B vitamin, a specific amount, or a specific coenzyme in a specific amount, or amount of magnesium that is necessary for the chemical reaction. Because we have a chemical reaction that becomes an electric reaction that becomes an action potential. So we have a physical word that becomes an energy word. So everything I do for you physically has to become energetically sound. That's why I also restore the mitochondria at the same time. So we, in the IV program that we do, we fuel the mitochondria with the proper food for mitochondrial restoration as well. So it's like a restorative business. We restore the mitochondria, but at the same time, we help detoxing people from all the toxins because there is competition. Like alcohol, for example, it becomes acetaldehyde in the body, and that affects the liver. So once the liver is damaged, that's the most detoxifying, the strongest detox system in your body is your liver. So if we don't address liver health during that process, but the beauty of the program is an outpatient program. We don't substitute drugs with the drug. We don't give you Suboxone. We don't give people methadone. We don't give people any other drug substitution. So if anybody is looking for a doctor who substitutes, I am not the one. I'm a restoration doctor. So I restore people's amino acid. I restore people's neuroendocrine dysfunction. With IVs, with meditation, with the entire system that I do, oxygen therapy, light therapy, you know, it's a tremendous amount of different things that you come to the office, you go home by the end of the day, within 3 hours or 4 hours of IV therapy, it's a 10-day program. It involves nutrition. We give you the proper nutrition. We give oral supplementation. You have to get the proper nutrition. But ask me, why is it IV that I give? Because your gastrointestinal tract is so compromised with all the drugs that you have used, or me personally, or any one of us, that I cannot rely on that to break down all the food we're eating into the smallest building blocks.
To digest, so that's the fastest way to get
digested. Yeah, not
need.
Only that, but
right?
But it goes with the proper coenzymes, cofactors, everything you need. It's like a kit. You're giving your brain the kit and tell the brain, do it. But if you don't give the brain the kit, you're asking the brain to look for 100 ways to. And we have a compromised brain already, so how would you expect that brain to really function?
Right. Are there withdrawal symptoms with your methods?
I have done hundreds of these patients, really, and I have yet to see one who's had any. And a lot of my patients really did not even come to me and say that they were addicts. It's a funny thing because they come and say, I have chronic fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
But I work on neuroendocrinists, and that's how I started to understand that
mm-hmm.
my system is the most metabolically sound system, the most energetically sound system, and the most restorative system. I had a gentleman who came to me, and he was an alcoholic, never, ever, ever told me until he got so much better. And he said, you know what? You're the one who caused me to get better. And, you know, he was coming day after day, week after week. And he just got so – but I wasn't treating that. I was restoring him with neuroendocrine balances anyway that has minimal. But then I started using this over and over and over with different people. And, you know, food addiction is an addiction. And I use neuroendocrine restoration with food addiction as well. So, but you have to have a maintenance program. And after
right.
that, you have to have a consolidation program. So maintenance is really you continue to either become part of a group or eating the right stuff or and maybe once in a while get an IV. But consolidation is to repeat one or two days of these every 6 months or so just continue. It's like maintaining your home.
Customized, right? Customized for each person depending on what they need, as you do for other kinds of treatments, like, you know, what we do.
Exactly.
It sounds very familiar, and, you know, it's a winning formula. You know, you customize it to the person what they need, and you see results. With respect to people, I know some of the data that we saw when we were looking into the show, people who are incarcerated, they're saying, you know, there's so many people who are addicted. Can I just give you a little bit of data that we learned? In 2005, federal, state, and local governments spent $74 billion on incarceration, court proceedings, probation, and parole for substance-involved adults and juvenile offenders. And less than 1% of that amount, about $632 million, on prevention and treatment. And they reported that they found that only 11% of inmates with addiction received any treatment during their incarceration. And if the nation would even, they would even break even in a year if just over 10% remained substance-free, crime-free, and employed. They were projecting that if you could get these prisoners who were incarcerated off of their substances and into prevention programs, the nation would reap an economic benefit of $90,953 per year. What do you have to say? I know that all the people that I know in this state and whatnot that are in, you know, involved in the penal system, there are so many people that are incarcerated that are there with mental health issues as well as the people who are addicted, and they're not helping them, Dr. Akori. What's the answer with regard to that aspect of crime?
I have to tell you, unless attention to our, you know, citizens, by
mm-hmm.
really giving them the best chance to really get better, we will never achieve financial freedom or happiness or joy. We
mm-hmm.
cannot just stop crime by locking everybody in. We're not
right.
going to stop crime by opening more jails or prisons. What we only could do is restore lifestyle. Is restore food and nutrition and exercise and develop communities who are supportive and
mm-hmm.
loving and forgiving, where you really replenish the reward system properly and not dysregulate that reward system and completely disfigure it and make it kind of a sick. You know, we
right.
have to start becoming more realistic. We have to stop.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question. We have a question from the chat room, and someone wants to know if you have experience with people who are addicted to meth. Are you able to treat that addiction the same way, or is there any difference?
Yes, you can. Meth is a stimulant as well. It works very similar, but the thing is that we really have to restore spirit, mind, body, restore nutrition, restore neuroendocrine dysfunction. And yes, it can happen. And yes, it's possible. And it's a waste not to take care of people we love. It's an investment in the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
I think we... deserve better. Incarcerated people deserve better.
Mm-hmm.
Our nation deserves better. Our people deserve better. Our children deserve better. And we should not keep this away from them. They deserve it. We deserve it. And we should really encourage it. And we should open discussions. And we should find easier ways to do it. And we should fund it. And we should really allow it to be part of everybody's life, not to the privileged few.
So irrespective of what the drug or substance they are addicted to, you can custom tailor. Are they all basically like a 10-day program that you customize for the person?
Most of them are 10-day programs.
Mm-hmm.
And but we do a maintenance program. We do a lifestyle-changing program,
mm-hmm.
and really we focus on nutrition, the right herbs as well. You know, these are helpful. These are tools that help us get better. I mean,
mm-hmm.
food is your medicine. Herbs are your medicine. Nutrition is your medicine. It's just we tailor it. The only thing the 10 days do is give you the kit to the brain to restore the brain. It's just a restorative function. And, yes, every single person is different. And, yes, we customize that program. Most of the time, I have to be very honest with you, and I hate to say this because I don't want people to think 3 days is enough, but within 3 to 4 days, a lot of people achieve significant mind clarity, and
mm-hmm.
they're able to make decisions, and they do not crave. And they're able to continue even without my treatment, but I don't feel it's enough because you really have to give the body everything it needs to build it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then
you have to do the maintenance program too. It's like those 30-day programs if you go to Betty Ford or someplace like that. I mean, you're there for 30 days or 60 or 90, but what happens after that if you don't follow what you're supposed to do?
Well, see, that's why we have to build communities. Communities that are going to tell you, there is food that helps your emotions. There is food that helps your serotonin level to go up. There is food that helps your GABA level to go up. There is, you know, that it's the right thing. You have to detox your belly. Detoxification is not restricted to addicts. Detoxification
mm-hmm.
is cleaning the system so the system can clean itself. We have a system that is capable to restore itself. What I do is help the system be able to restore itself. You give it the kit and the system fix it. You
mm-hmm.
have a system that is, that there's not one computer that is better than your brain. There is not one system that has been created, man-made, that is better than the system you have.
Mm-hmm.
You and the universe can reverse everything. The only thing is that there's so much irregularity and dysregulation that you need someone similar to me or who have the background care that I really want every one of us to have to help you restore and then maintain. It's the same
mm-hmm.
thing as you maintain your house, your car, your door, your kitchen, your trees. Everything has to have a little maintenance. So it's just
so by doing your program, you are essentially a substitute for crime too, because if they go through that program, they don't have the necessity to go out and buy goods so that they can or steal goods so that they can get the illicit drugs or in order to try to get that other high. You are a much healthier substitute than committing a crime in order for them to replicate that initial high that they can never get. Is that right?
They never get again. It's an initial high that is the eyes, the sun blinding you.
Mm-hmm.
You're chasing it for the rest of your life. But that beautiful sunshine that was too strong and it blinded your retina is now blinding your receptors. What we do is restore your receptors where they begin to enjoy that dopamine again by creating that dopamine again, by creating the whole system again. Do you know that you have an endocannabinoid system in the brain to help you with pain? Endocannabinoid system is this marijuana system.
Mm-hmm.
It's all made for your good, not made for your own demise. The beauty of your body is a temple, is made for you to enjoy and get better, not for you to destroy yourself. Self-destruction mm-hmm. was not part of the deal. Self-destruction is a result of our new approach to things, expectations. We have to start loving ourselves first before waiting for people to love us. We have to start changing the way we think, because emotion is also a drug. Good emotions are a great drug. Bad emotions are destructive drugs. So really, love is a drug. Laughter mm-hmm. is a drug. Happiness is a drug. Walking down the street is a drug. It's a good, feel-good drug. When you do the right thing, your epinephrine level goes down. Your good norepinephrine level is up, your dopamine is up, your serotonin is proper, and your GABA is good. Everything is just right. So it's
how do you get them to choose that road, Dr. Akori, in terms of what are you? I know you're embarking on doing a lot of presentations now with other doctors around the country, and you're getting this to an acceptance level in the medical community. Where do we go from there, such that we can bring it down to the level of where we are as ordinary citizens? With criminals who may be out on the street, maybe looking in medicine cabinets and saying, you know, this is the path versus this. What is that thing that's going to make them change and use your path versus the path of crime?
Well,
what can you say to them?
What I can say to them is love yourself, feel deserving, and know that you deserve way better than where you're at. And then start understanding the quick fix mentality won't get it. There's no drug that will stop you from being taking another drug. You've got to restore the system. If your highways are messed up, don't use a quick fix situation for your highways. Open those highways and clean those highways so that everything just flow again. You want all the neuron in your brain to communicate in a proper manner so that you can make the right decision, so that you don't lose your children and your husband and you don't lose your life. Become your CEO of your own personal health and decide who is the real doctor you want to side up with. Who do you want to partner with to help you, coach you through, because honestly, I don't treat people. They treat themselves. I coach them through the treatment. Mm-hmm. I mean, the power is theirs, not mine. I am a coach, and I'm a restorative. I restore.
Right.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Where
do you begin in terms of picking from the multitudes, the groups of people, the organization, where you can do the most good and get your information across? Are there particular organizations that you're targeting to try to get your message out to that will help, you know, the masses instead of one person at a time?
I really want churches, communities, schools, all these people. We need to start local. We need to start at our own backyard and then mm-hmm. gather steam and get everybody else and march together. Mm-hmm. I am very grateful to the Lord for being able to take my program national to the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, where I'm trying to solicit hundreds of doctors. Any patient can call their doctor and say, hey, listen, know about the A4M program. Go to that class. Listen to it. Become a member and train. Train with Dr. Okori. Learn from her. Learn from others. See what we can do together. That's one place where you can begin. That's one place one person can begin. The second place is really read my blogs. Read about recommendations. I mean, I had people to tell me, why would people come to you if you have that much in? Maybe I'm too kind. I don't know, but I give a lot of info. You know, why am I doing this? Because I have a mission, and because I've seen a lot of deaths that have been related to drugs, whether it's a crime of killing oneself, because that's still a crime, even if it's a suicide, you know, mm-hmm. or sure. driving in a car, which is the worst weapon there is. I mean, it's a fast moving weapon. You know, driving in the car with your children, and then they die because you're drunk, and yeah, they don't. They die and you don't. And you know,
what is the prevalence? Is there a stat that you can let us know? We've got like 2 minutes left with regard to how many people are actually dying of addiction, committing suicide. I mean, just so that our audience has some idea of the impact here, Dr. Okori.
Well, I have to tell you, 1 in 3 are addicts, unfortunately, and some of them are because of us. 1 in 3, lethal deaths from anything related to addiction escalated uh-huh. to the point that is the number one cause of all accidental deaths and crimes are related to drugs or alcohol or any kind of addiction, even lack of sleep. So all the accidental deaths, so imagine how many of these, it's becoming the number one in the nation of cause of death. Actually, deaths related to addiction are actually now competing with cancer. So
wow.
It's pretty...
That's scary. Well, can you let us know, give us your website and maybe phone number if people are interested in more information with regard to that?
My website is awaremed.com, and the main reason is awareness. So awareness is the key to everything. So awaremed.com.
Mm-hmm.
Our phone number is 843-213-1480. Mm-hmm. And really, all crime victims have to do with drugs. They have been victims because somebody has been under the influence of something. So all crime victims have to be advocates of this program. Every one of us have to be. All missing parents, all missing children are because mm-hmm. of some kind of drug addiction or some kind of addiction of any sort. Addiction to hatred. I mean, hatred is an addiction. I mean, you could be addicted to
right.
a lot of things, you know. That's the only way the reward system is skewed. So,
and by you training other people, it's going to increase. So you're not the only person that's going to be doing this. So I'm so glad for the response. And unfortunately, we're vastly running out of time. But we will perhaps we can do another follow up show. We will do a blog. We will have this show available for people, Dr. Okori. And I have to say, Thank you so much for spending the hour with us. It's been very enlightening and helpful, and I thank you so much because it really is. You're helping to decrease the shattered lives, okay? And So I will have to say good evening to all of my audience. Please go to DonnaGore.com, and we'll be with you on next Saturday for another enlightening and enjoyable show. Delilah, thank you so much, and we'll say good evening for now. Dr. Corey.